Welcome to the Pazos Podcast, episode number 2. That's right, we're keeping on going strong.
Haven't seen you guys in forever.
I know.
Oh my God, where have you been?
I mean, it just seems like ages since we just sat down and, you know, had a beer together. It's been a while.
It's almost like we could pick up where we left off.
Yeah, right. I think we can.
We had so much fun last time. Yeah, we had so much fun last time, though. I'm surprised you guys let us come back. I mean, this is obviously a big mistake. No one knows what they're doing, but as long as you keep letting us drink these wonderful beers and talk about the things that matter to us when it comes to beer and food, we'll keep showing up. You're going to have to boot us out the door. You know that.
I feel like the second podcast that we record on these days is always going to be better than the first one since we're two more,
for
two
obvious
more beers
reasons.
In.
But yeah, guys, so, all right, we left off at the last episode. You know, we were talking a little bit about beer pairings, things like that with different foods and all that sort of stuff. We talked about the pint night beer selection that was there and how Western Pale Ales were a good introduction to IPAs. Would you like to expand on that a little bit more since we ran out of time?
Well, like I said before, I think that a lot of people's problem with IPAs is more the bitterness than the actual hops. I think there's a diversity in hops, too. You know, there are citric hops that have a nice grapefruit flavor or lemon flavor, and then there are, you know, your dank, resinous, piney hops. And I think for me, at least, when I was being introduced into hoppy beers, I found that I didn't like certain hop profiles, but I did like others. The first one that I really got into was Centennial. It was... you know, the Centennial IPA from Founders. I thought that was the first one where it was like very hop forward, but I enjoyed it. So I went from there, and doing the pairing dinners, I sort of learned what hop profiles I liked and which ones I didn't. And then the other thing is when they mix hops, sometimes they mix them to where one will complement the other, and I like one of them, and the complementing of the other hop sort of introduced me to the other hop. So I'll have a beer that, you know, has Citra and Cascade, and because I like Citra, it sort of introduced me into Cascade in a way that I liked it. So I think a pale ale being less bitter but still hop forward, where you get those characteristics from the hops, I think it's a good introduction to an IPA, because, you know, somebody, just keep trying them. You've got to keep trying them, because there may be another type of hop that you like that you didn't know that you liked. You know, like I said, I'd had Sierra Nevada Pale Ale before. I'd had Stone IPA. I'd had all of these other IPAs that I really couldn't get into. But then, you know, once I had had that introductory one, I sort of saw the beauty of it, and it really got me into it.
Honestly, your conversation takes me back to the first time when I really fell in love with beer. When I got into college, I was a little bit older than the other students here, so I teamed up with some other students that were a little bit older than me, and we go out to Linus. We drink, like, the Guinness and the Harp and the Bass and the Sam Adams, whatever. But it wasn't until a couple years later, after I already got them, you know, my whistle wet for better beer, I took a trip to Portland, Oregon. And I went out there for study reasons, for occupation reasons, and every night I couldn't wait to get off work, because we go out to these bars, we go to these brew pubs, and I always get the flight. And the flight would consist of like 4 to 6 different beers, and I always drink the amber ale, the blonde ale, even the pale I like, the stout I like. It's that damn bitter thing at the end that I didn't want to drink, but I paid for it, so I had to chug that thing on my way out the door, pay my tab, and off to the next one. We do that 5 or 6 times a night, and so I'd always put that bitter thing off, that IPA, until the very end. It wasn't until I got back to Lexington and I started looking around, and we're talking, you know, mid-90s, late-90s at that time. We didn't have the beer selection we do now. And so I looked around, and I didn't recognize anything on the shelves here as being that flavor that I kind of wanted. And after about a month, I started giving around to that bitter thing. I was like, I'd be damned. I mean, I really like that bitter thing, that thing I put off to the end of every one of those tastings, and I just chugged it just to get my money's down my throat. And all of a sudden, I had thirst for that bitter thing. And so the only way I had to do is homebrew these beers. So that got me into a homebrewing habit that got me into other things in craft beer. And now what I'm doing now as a sister in the beer trap is just that homebrew hobby that has gotten way out of control. But it's that hops that I didn't realize at the time. You're so taken back that beers can be this bitter. And every time you taste something you don't recognize, your first reaction is, I don't like it. But we need to turn off that response by drinking those things often enough to a point where, okay, now we don't necessarily say, well, it's weird, so I don't like it. Now it's like I've assessed it properly and I still don't like it. And so I think that we've come around to hops and saying, okay, that is the spice of beer. If malt is the soul of beer, if it's the sweetness, if that's the backbone of a beer, then the hops is what it's going to take to offset that sweetness, to give it more floral aroma, give it spicy aromas, or give it some sort of depth of flavor, complexity, to offset that sweetness, to make the beer palatable. Without hops, none of these beers would be any good, but we have to use some hops to a certain degree in order to bring the beer within balance or even showcase their abilities as a whole.
I think another thing is bitterness is a flavor that Americans are sort of not grown up to appreciate. You know, if you talk to a lot of people from other countries, they say that American food tastes like dessert. Like, everything is sweet. And most Americans are brought up to drink juice and pop and, you know, all of these very sweet drinks. And then bitter is the exact opposite of that. It's like, you know, that is the flavor that people are not used to in American cuisine. And I think, you know, I don't know anybody that drank black coffee the first time and it was like, oh, geez, this is really good. It's an acquired taste. And I think as you grow with your palate and as you get older, I think people's, you know, their tastes change. And I think that even if you don't like something, you need to keep trying to see, because you may appreciate it at a time that you wouldn't expect. I mean, in my business in food, you know, I'm constantly trying things that I may not have liked before. I was never really a big cauliflower fan, but I had one cauliflower dish that sort of introduced me to it in a different way than I had had it before. I'd always either had it raw on like a crudité tray, or I had had it like steamed at like the lunch counter at school, you know. Yeah. And those are the two worst ways to eat cauliflower, I think, you know. So then when I had it like really darkly roasted and like caramelized, it was like, whoa, this is not what I've had before. So I think, you know, if you say I don't like IPAs and then you just never drink another IPA, you're not really leaving yourself open to appreciate those flavors. Maybe later on your palate changes and you can appreciate it later on, or maybe you've had something in the meantime that has sort of introduced you to those flavors.
Yeah, like we left off with the last podcast is, you know, a lot of times when people ask me, it's like, I'm trying to get into hops. A lot of times it's a girl, and she'll come up to me, she's like, my husband's really into IPAs. It's the only thing he buys. I want to drink beer, but I'm afraid to start with these IPAs. I just don't like them. I kind of want to get into them. Help me get there. So my answer is like, if you don't like an IPA, let's get you an Imperial IPA. And they're like, are you crazy? I don't even like the standard stuff. You want to give me something that's more than that? And I'm like, well, here's the reason why, is because whenever it comes to standard IPA, they've really suppressed that malt character very, very low, and they've increased the hops so high that it dominates the beer. But whenever you choose an Imperial IPA, something different happens. Now you've acquired the alcohol that it takes and the during the fermentation process. The yeast just doesn't do efficient of its job as eating as much sugar, so it leaves more residual sugar behind. Makes the beer a little sweeter beer. So even though the bitterness level or the hop level hasn't risen any at all, the malt character has kind of caught up a little bit. So it offsets that hops and that bitterness from the hops just a little bit, and it makes the beer a little bit more palatable. So you get more of the flavor from the hops, you get more of the aroma from the hops, you get more of that upfront bouquet from the hops that you really, really like, but you don't get that bitterness in the finish because there's more of a hoppy or a malty rebuttal to go along with it. So it brings the beer better within balance.
And you get them a couple 10.5% beers in them, they're going to like it even better.
That doesn't hurt.
Never does. But, all right, so we've talked about ways to introduce to beers and such like that, but what about what is your all's personal favorite? I know you guys have so many different beers to choose from and it's going to be a difficult choice, but maybe top three, what do you guys think?
It is it's sort of like asking who's your favorite child, you know what I mean? It's tough, and like Kevin was saying before, it your mood, you know, my mood is different depending on what I'm eating, it depending on if I'm eating or not. You know, if I'm drinking a beer after I cut the grass, then I want something different than I am when I get the short ribs out at a restaurant. You know what I mean? But three beers that I could drink anytime, Shokaveza from Stone is one of them.
Very good.
Love that beer. I could drink it all the time. Another one is Rochefort 8.
Yep.
That one is, there are a lot of great Belgians, but that is probably my favorite. And then third, I don't know, Prairie Bomb is a killer beer.
Go back to the stout.
I'm a big stout guy. I love stouts, but that one is one of the first beers that I had where it was like so perfectly balanced that I was just like, I couldn't pick anything wrong out of it. Usually you can say, well, you know, I'd like this a little bit more, this a little bit less, but that is one of those ones where I'm just like falling in love with it. Yeah.
As far as I'm concerned, you know, when somebody asks me, so what's the best beer you've had? Well, it depends. What are you buying? And so if you want to buy me a beer, that's my favorite beer today. But when you're speaking from a pure culinary perspective, my flavors go two different directions. It goes sweet and it goes hoppy. So if I'm going for a sweet beer, there's a three-headed monster of breweries and beers that are out there in Belgium that really hits the wheelhouse for me. It's Roquefort. You mentioned Roquefort 8. Mine's Roquefort 10. And then you have St. Bernardus 12. And then you have the Best Flettern 12. Those three beers, same recipe. They've evolved over time. St. Bernardus, the flavor of that one's right smack, but it's not as sweet as the 10. It's not as winey as the Best Flettern. And so the St. Bernardus 12 really hits it for me on that end. On the hoppy side, I've never had a beer that was as juicy and flavorful and floral up front as the Alchemist Heady Topper and then finishes as bitter, as crisp, as clean as any West Coast IPA. So those are the two beers that hit for me. And then the third beer, like I said, what are you buying?
For me, I honestly can't even begin to answer that question now because I feel like you guys are going to open up my mind so much more to different types of beers. And you will probably laugh at me, but I'll go with my best effort as far as my top three currently, before you guys have gotten your hands inside my wheelhouse and, you know, manipulated and made me like other stuff, because I think that I can hear that coming.
But, let's hear it.
I think I'm going to go with West 6 Cocoa Porter.
Nice.
The Porter, I've always loved it since the first time I ever drank it. Ron Guy's Truth IPA.
Yeah.
That's my favorite IPA, period. And then a third... I think I'll go with Dogfish Head 90 Minute Ale.
Solid choice right there. All of those, I think, are fantastic choices.
90 Minute's definitely a classic. We just did a beer pairing dinner last night with Ron Geist and had a version of Truth called Juicy Truth. And if you get a chance to try that one, it is fantastic. It's almost like an IPA Rattler mix. It's very, very juicy.
Well, I'm going to have to do that for sure. Something interesting that came up recently in the news, Walmart is getting sued right now because they released craft brews that weren't exactly craft brews.
Yep.
And I thought that was pretty funny. What makes a craft brew a craft brew?
It's very funny you mentioned that. The rules on that is the governing body for craft beer is called the Brewers Association. They're housed out of Denver, Colorado. And they set the definition for what a craft brew is so that if other people agree with them, they can lobby at the state, local, and the federal level about the tax incentives and represent the small guy against the big guy when it comes to beer. And so they have set the beer, craft beer, as being, it's got to be locally and independently owned. It's got to be made of true ingredients. And if you're going to use any ingredient that's like a rice or a corn, it's got to be used to enhance its character, not to lighten or diminish its character, especially for profits and gains. So what's happened there is they've allowed enough leeway for people to basically make craft beer a certain way. Now that the craft beer is real red hot, you have other entities like the Walmarts and the other big people like that who want to have some of these other breweries that are mega breweries to be able to make beers that taste kind of like craft beer, but doesn't exactly hear that rule. And now the Brewers Association is fighting for that, fighting for the definition. And so it's gone to a federal court. And so that's why the lawsuit exists.
And, you know, you talk about how they're kind of making craft brews. I remember reading a description of one of those brews as good flippy cup beer. That was pretty accurate, I would say.
Yeah, there's a lot of those pseudo brands that are out there that tries to look, act, and pretend like they're craft beers when they're really not. And that definition of craft beer is really, really blurred. I don't think it's a really well-thought-out definition. And the rules of beer keeps changing, if not from the Brewers Association perspective, definitely from the consumer's perspective. So the consumer will ultimately decide what a craft beer is and isn't.
Well, guys, we have reached the end of our second episode.
Oh, my goodness. You think they're going to let us back for a third?
Probably.
Probably not.
I think they should. I mean, I want to learn more. That's exactly why I'm here. So I'm excited to learn more about different beer and have some fun. I mean, this has been a blast.
Fantastic. Let's do it again next week. See you guys.
All right. Thank you guys for listening to Pazzo's podcast on WLXG.com. If you guys have a question for us, you can tweet us at Pazzo's podcast, or you can follow our Instagram at Pazzo's podcast WLXG, or you can email us at pazzospodcast@gmail.com. We had a question for you. What was that, Jason?
Let's say, what are your favorite pale ales and IPAs?
I like that. So,
keep
all right, guys, what are your favorite pale ales and IPAs? Answer it, send it to us, and we would love to hear from you. Thank you guys so much for listening. This is the Pazzo's Podcast.